non-general funded activities from license fees, stumpage fees, mineral leasing, and so on. So 18% of our budget is general funded, and we took the governor's task at hand and brought forward a budget that you have before you that represents a 10% reduction in general fund obligation. So in closing, and then I'll turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Shad, the department took the direction for the budget development to heart. We bring before you today a budget we think reflects the needs that we have to promote economic development in the state, the needs we have to conserve our natural resources, and the needs we have to be more fiscally prudent. And that's the budget you're going to be seeing over the next few days. We appreciate, again, your time in looking at this budget, working with us to pass a budget, and we'll be delighted to work with you to answer any questions you might have. With that, Mr. Chairman, if I could, I'd like to turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Dave Shad.
Thank you, Commissioner, for those comments. And again, for those that weren't here today, we're not going to be talking about fee increases for hunting and fishing as well as AIS. That's going to be saved for good discussion on Thursday. So just so the members know that moving forward. And again, any questions for the Commissioner? If not, thank you very much. Good, Mr. Shad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Dave Shad, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Natural Resources. And what I thought I'd do is just very quickly talk a little bit about our approach to budgeting and provide you just a little bit of an overview of how we try to link budgets to our mission, to our priority work, to make sure that we are focused on the highest priority things out there, that the folks that are paying the bills are getting good value for that, and that we really are being responsive to the most important natural resource challenges that we've got out there. Just quickly, how this budget presentation over the next 2 days is going to unfold. Today we're going to talk, just provide kind of an introduction of our budget and some of our programs. And in your packet is this handout called Budgeting for Results, and Bob Meyer is going to walk through this later on today. This is an overview of our 10 and 11 budget, our current year budget, kind of program by program, looking at how we're spending the money this biennium and some of our priorities program by program to kind of give you a good orientation, a high-level view of the work that we're doing now. And then from there, we will be moving into a discussion of our proposed 12 and 13 budget. We'll start with general fund reductions, move from there to some of the big change items, the hunting and fishing restructuring and fee increase, the AIS, and a couple of the others that cross over between several of our divisions, and then move on to some of the other initiatives. I think there's 25 initiatives at all that we'll walk through in fairly rapid pace after we get through a couple of those very large ones.
Commissioner Shad, if I might, yes, just for a point of clarification to the committee members, with your institutional knowledge of the budget over the years, maybe you'd like to comment on general fund portion of our budget has been shrinking over the years from where it has been in the past, say 7-8 years ago versus now.
Mr. Chairman, I'll get to that in just a couple more slides, if that would be okay. Very quickly, this is our DNR mission. For those that haven't seen it, it's a three-pronged mission where we work with our citizens to conserve and manage resources, provide outdoor recreation opportunities that are tied to those natural resources, and provide for commercial uses of natural resources in ways that create sustainable quality of life for our state citizens. And these three kind of separate parts of our mission are sometimes in conflict, but not always. But when they are, we try to find kind of that place in the middle where we can, for example, achieve economic development, provide jobs based on natural resources, while still protecting that base, that natural resource base. That's really the foundation of a lot of that wealth in the state, and provides that outdoor recreation that's so important to quality of life here to many of our citizens. And so we use these three circles to kind of outline that we do have three parts to our mission, and we strive to achieve, try to find that middle ground wherever we can. As you know, we're made up of divisions, and actually as a result of some recent consolidation, the number of DNR divisions has gone from 8 in the recent past to 6 now. In the last couple of years, we've merged our parks and trails divisions into a single park and trail division focused on recreation, and our ecological resources and waters divisions have been integrated into a single division to focus, to do a better job of focusing on watersheds and kind of bringing together the work that we do on the land with the work that we do in the water, and bring our scientists and our ecologists together with some of our regulators to provide a more seamless approach to our management of water. And this idea of integrating across divisions is really important. The word division by its nature implies something that divides us, but we really don't approach the work of our divisions that way. Our expectation is that they work together to achieve the broad DNR goals and objectives, and work together to achieve our mission. Based on that mission, we've developed 6 goals here, very quickly they're to conserve natural lands and habitats, conserve and enhance Minnesota's water resources and watersheds, which are very abundant here. We're fortunate to have abundant water resources, but we can't take that for granted. Make sure that we manage our fish and wildlife populations and provide all the recreation that comes with those healthy populations. To provide high quality and diverse outdoor recreation opportunities through our outdoor recreation system, system of public lands out there. To provide for sustainable economic use of our abundant natural resources. Again, the natural resources are a foundation for huge economies in this state, whether we're talking about mining or forestry, certainly in the north, but also a lot of the recreational opportunities that we provide out there provide tens of thousands of jobs across the state and are very dependent on managing, for example, fish and wildlife populations well. And then finally, to deliver our services to run the department effectively and efficiently, to make sure that the people that are paying our bills are getting good value for that. Commissioner Landwehr talked a little bit about our budget priorities here, and as we approached developing this FY 12 and 13 budget, and this actually started back when Commissioner Holston was still in office, we recognize that all of you are going to have a very challenging time here dealing with a large general fund deficit. We didn't want to come here, and make your jobs tougher without offering some very creative solutions. We understand that we need to be part of this general fund solution, and so we have provided a budget here that focuses general fund reductions in areas that we think will have minimum harm to our mission, our ability to carry out our mission, and have also come up with, we think, some good and some creative ways to backfill behind some of those priorities and make sure that we've got the resources needed to continue to address our priority work so that we can still provide for that economic benefit out there, especially in rural parts of the state. And then, Mr. Chairman, to your question, just maybe just a real high-level view on the department's budget and how it's changed over the years. On the left here, you'll see this is our fiscal year 2000 budget for the department, and on the right is our fiscal year 2010. And on the left, you'll see that large blue slice, that's 48% of our budget at that time, was made up of general fund, and that totaled $121 million. at that time. You can see that blue piece of the pie has really shrunk over 10 years, both in terms of percentage of our budget, but also in terms of real dollars. The general fund support for the agency has declined by about $40 million in that 10 years, and the percentage change has been from 48% of our budget to 18% of our budget. You can see that we have a more diverse set of funding available to us in fiscal year 10, and that's been the result of a lot of innovation over the last 10 years, looking for creative new ways to fund our work, and also the new legacy funding is reflected here, the clean water, parks and trails, and outdoor heritage dollars that have been appropriated to the agency are reflected here also. So our work has changed as our funding has changed. We're much more reliant on dedicated sources of funding now than we've ever been. That trend continues, and actually, as you get into the governor's proposed two-year budget here, you'll see that trend, that increased reliance on dedicated sources of funding and fee-based sources of funding at the expense of general fund support will continue. So with that, maybe I'll stop for questions. This is on the left, the proposed budget, or the 10 and 11 budget, based on fund and then based on program by division here on the right. And with that, maybe as backdrop, unless there's questions, I'll turn it over to Mr. Meyer, and he can go through this budgeting for results handout.
Any questions from the committee? Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
I think before proceeding, we will ask Dan Mueller to go through the sheet you have here while Assistant Commissioner's getting up to the table here. If you could quickly go through that, that's this one we have in our packet here. So, Dan, if you'd like to run through that real quickly, and if there's any questions.
Mr. Chairman and members, there's two versions that at least members will have. There's a smaller version, and I had it a legal size one handed out that hopefully the numbers are a little bit bigger. So you can read them. But what this is just the overall summary of the governor's budget, just the general fund for the agencies in this area under this committee. It's a little bit different tracking than what the Department of Finance or MMB has in their tracking. So I wanted to make sure that members had a good idea of what the overall cut was for the agencies in this budget division. The columns that I'll probably be going through quick is the first gray column, the governor minus 2012-13 forecast. Now, this is the amount of cuts the governor is recommending versus the base budget, not versus the current biennium. First agency we'll see is PCA, and actually the net effect of the governor's budget, now this is just general fund again, there's a $94,000 increase to the PCA. Most of that is due to a one-time expenditure of $1.5 million for the PCA. And we'll get to that when we go through the PCA's budget. Now to DNR that we're talking about now, you'll see here that if you look on line 23, now this does not include PILT. I think some of DNR's budget numbers will include overall numbers with including PILT, and that has been transferred over to the tax committee in this area. So this is what we're looking at in this committee. The governor is proposing a $154.1 million for the DNR, which is a $20.2 million cut or 11.6, but what we have to balance out here is $10.395 million of that cut is actually moving money over to the Natural Resources Fund, both the revenue that they collect in fees and expenditures. So the real net reduction is only 5.7% or $9.882 million. is that's how we'll look at it when we discuss their net cut. Because we got to count money that's moving out of the on the revenue side too. So their net cut is $9.88 million. Met Council, the governor is recommending a $2.85 million cut, which is a 40% reduction of their general fund. The governor is recommending no change to the Minnesota Conservation Corps. Next, we'll see Board of Water and Soil Resources. The governor is recommending about a $2.5 million overall reduction to them, which is 8.9%. And then the Minnesota Zoo, about a 5% cut, which is $624,000. For the whole division, it's a 26.139% reduction in spending, but there's also, with the DNR's budget, almost $10.4 million going out on the revenue side also. So the net, the targeted, sort of the target that we talk about around here of their general fund reduction is $15.7 million for this entire division. If you look at, if you consider that over a whole base spending for this budget, it's about a 6.6% reduction to this division when you include the revenues leaving the general fund and the overall spending reductions. Now, this is just general fund. I'll have a more complete spreadsheet as we move on about all funds, about how much other funds may be replacing some of these general fund reductions. But for now, this is just the general fund reductions.
Members, we thought this was important for everybody to see exactly just what exactly we're dealing with here with the governor's proposal. All our budgets are on the left-hand side, so this is something you can keep near and dear to yourself and give you a little better idea when we're talking about general fund dollars. And as he explained, there's going to be some juggling of dollars back and forth with regards to some revenues, new revenues, proposed new revenues. We're going to be talking about those on Thursday, I think, in general. And just so everybody knows exactly where we're at. Any questions before we move into the presentation? Thank you. Assistant Commissioner, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant to the Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. As Commissioner Landwehr and Deputy Commissioner Shad had laid out for you, the goal today is to go through, think of it as building the base for our discussions on the change items in our budget. What I'm trying to do with you on this budgeting for results document is give you a detailed understanding of our current FY10 and FY11 budget that's been appropriated 2 years ago and then adjusted last session dealing with some unallotments that we needed to take into effect. But this will show you, and we'll have a discussion here, first of all, division by division, outlined by a strategic objective, and then some outcomes on what some of the building blocks of the department are. We feel it's important for you all to have an understanding, not only at the high level of a division, but what the division's actual day-to-day jobs and responsibilities are and how those individual pieces add up in total to make the DNR budget. So with that, Mr. Chairman, my goal is to try to get through this budgeting for results document this afternoon and begin our change items discussion. And as you had spoken, we will come back on Thursday and have a more detailed discussion on the hunting and fishing license proposal and also our aquatic invasive species, and finish with the change item presentation at that time. So with that, Mr. Chairman, working off of the document titled Minnesota DNR Budgeting for Results, February 22nd, 2011, the first page just kind of shows a graphic that we've talked about in the past, how we view our management and our budgeting processes within the department. Planning, budgeting, measuring, and adapting, and how we take into effect our missions and goals and drive that into performance measurements and targets. We're continuously using adaptive management processes within the department to make sure we're effective, meeting our outcomes and objectives, and if not, trying to determine why and readjusting course to meet those goals. The second page of this document here just gives you a little bit of background information, and it also talks about our mission and goals there on the right-hand side. And as you'll see on page one here of the spreadsheet, There's a, the third column in says agency goals, for example. If you look on page one under lands and minerals, under real estate management, under the agency goals, it says G5 and G6. What that is telling you is that building block relates to the conservation of Minnesota's natural resources, providing a solid foundation for strong economy, healthy environment, and vibrant communities, and also goal 6, that will efficiently and effectively deliver services to meet our mission. So for each building block, you can relate what that is to our overall goals. We thought that would be helpful for you to help understand that as well. So with that, Mr. Chairman, moving on to page one under lands and minerals, the first strategic objective here is our real estate management activities. And as Mr. Mueller has outlined, this appropriation, which is approximately $54,900,000, of which about 80% of that is PILT, or $43,700,000, is what are we spending on these activities to date. Now, the governor's budget does recommend transferring the entire PILT program to the Department of Revenue, which is something our future numbers will reflect as we review the language and appropriations within the governor's budget. But it also shows here that under this outcome, only 10%, or about $5,700,000, is actually general fund. The other of it comes from other sources of funding, such as fees, permit to mine activities and things of that nature, or the chargebacks that we have in this division for the work that we do. And actually, the permit to mine comes in here a little bit later, but if you go over to the next column under example indicators and targets, this shows some of the work that's done here within this division under this building block. Our conservation easement inventory, the writing and development of these easements, coordinating with the lands records project to make sure that we know what we have, what they say, and where they are, is a huge part of this. And you can see the outcome here for this past biennium. We've scanned over 17,000 documents, coding them into our new lands record system and developing baseline property record formats that will not only be available by our staff, but also by you and other citizens of the state will be able to go through the internet and view on a document-by-document, parcel-by-parcel basis, land ownership, how the land was acquired, boundaries, and all the documents that we have within our real estate records on those parcels. Moving on to the next piece here, some of the big outcomes here, doing our fee title and easement activities, land sales, land acquisitions, and dealing with PILT. Also utility licenses. We have a utility license fee that pays for part of these activities, generated over $3 million in revenue last biennium, and also the PILT payments, you can see at over $20 million per year. Moving on to just the last one there, talking about workflow and documentation with our lands record management system. Mr. Chair, the next piece of building block within lands and minerals deals with minerals management activities. And you can see of this expenditure, $7.5 million are appropriated, of which only about $300,000 are general fund. Some of the outcomes here, over the past biennium, about 37 million tons of state-owned taconite were mined, and with about $43 million of rental and royalty income being deposited into the general fund or the school trust fund. This is a resulting increase of our ability to authorize and review our royalty rates and making sure that we have a competitive rate and we're not overcharging or undercharging. You can see another big one here was negotiating leases for something up in Senator Saxaw's district, Magnetation Project, which is actually re-mining or refining the tailings out of basins that have been mined previously using a process to make iron ore out of what was once considered waste material. So it's a hugely successful project that we're really proud to highlight. Moving on to the Mineland Reclamation section, Mr. Chairman. This is where all of our mining or a lot of our mining activities come from, dealt with here. And $4.6 million per year are budgeted for that activity, with $1.4 million coming from the general fund. Some of the supporting programs, environmental review, lease administration, mine permitting, inspections, environmental cooperative research, and other research activities are funded here. was passed over 10 and 11 biennium. We've been able to complete research projects dealing with the removal of mercury from taconite stack emissions, continued evaluation of mercury and sulfate impacts on receiving waters, and just help continue our understanding of mine waste behavior and mitigation potential to help improve and support the industry here in the state. Mr. Chair, that completes the Lands and Minerals Division. If there are no questions, I'm going to move right into the Ecological and Water Resources Division.
Thank you. And I think what we'll do is each division, we'll open it up for questions. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, I'm just looking at the summary page on this budgeting for results process. At what point or where do you get citizen input in this plan, or was this all done by DNR staff?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Peterson, you're talking about the introductory page here?
Yeah. This right here, where you described the whole budgeting for results process,
the input
and the goals.
Mr.
Meyer, go ahead.
Over on the top, where you're talking about our mission is to work with citizens, conserve and manage the state's natural resources. We work closely with the industries that we deal with, mining industry, timber industry, other stakeholders that we have in developing and examining what our program should be, how they operate, and how we can improve or change them. Through our rulemaking and permitting processes, we're refining them, not only within the DNR, but as an interagency group, the DNR and PCA and others as well. I guess, Senator Peterson, maybe I'm not quite sure what kind of citizen input you're suggesting.
Follow up.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, my question relates to, at what point? I mean, this summary page gives me the impression that this was all done by DNR staff, that all these goals were developed by DNR staff. And I think that's fine if that's the case, but then, we ought to recognize that this was done by staff. It wasn't done by the consumer or the customer or the citizen that pays for a study like this and pays for each one of these areas. And that would be my only input. We should be looking for a way to get our residents' input on the goals for the DNR. Is there a way that the residents get their input to you in terms of putting together goals or performance goals?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Peterson, we work openly with the citizens throughout the state, holding open meetings, having discussions, as I mentioned, with industries, with stakeholders and citizens. We have many different citizen input meetings dealing with fish and game habitat, licensing structures, season setting. We have a series of open meetings on an annual basis throughout the state dealing with, again, fish and wildlife habitat. But we're continually open to having discussions about what our goals and missions are. These are the goals that we have as an agency, much like our mission or conservation mission is. We haven't had a survey, so to speak, on what the goals of the department should be, if that's what you're suggesting.
Follow up.
Yeah. Well, the reason I ask is I have been through a process very similar to this for a city with a $90 million a year budget, and the elected officials put together the priorities on behalf of the residents, and then those priorities went to the staff. So I guess my question is there a process for the DNR to allow residents to identify priorities, and give to the DNR to implement?
Mr. Chair, Mark. Senator Peterson, I think there are those opportunities within each division. If you look at the divisions as we speak of them, we work with the stakeholders and the groups, citizens, so to speak, at that level and take their input into developing the work plan. This document is just one way of slicing the DNR's budget so a person can understand where the money is being spent, how much the general fund is, and what the outcomes are. I think what you're talking more, at least in what I'm thinking of, is more of a strategic planning process or a guidance process that, we try to adapt and bring into our planning as we have, but we have no formal process to deal with that, so to speak.
Thank you.
Mr. Meyer, if I might add, I think what would probably help a little bit is the roundtable discussions that go on every year. There's stakeholders there. I've attended a couple of those, very well attended by folks who who deal with the DNR pretty on a regular basis, as well as open meetings that I've attended as well. So, there's a certain amount of dialogue there that goes on. I think that might be what you're talking about. But go ahead, Deputy.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you very much. If there are no other questions, I'll move into the Ecological Resources Division. You can see this division, and actually, it's a little bit different, and we'll be clarifying this as we move through this budget round. We've recently, in the middle of this biennium, combined the Ecological Resources Division and the Waters Division. So we talk about, and in this presentation, there's two separate budgets, but moving forward, they'll be combined into one budget. I think I'm going to rely on the help of Mr. Mueller and Mr. Knopf and other staff to help us get through that. But just so you're clear that these two divisions are functioning and operating as one division now and will be appropriated under one division within the governor's budget. So you can see for the total division, it's a little over $100 million. And then the first strategic objective dealing with inventory analysis and monitoring. This includes our work doing monitoring and inventory of aquatic and terrestrial resources, surface and groundwater, rare plants and animals, and scientific and natural areas, analyzing data and making information available to decision makers. About 23% of the $35.8 million is general fund, or a little bit over $8 million, Mr. Chairman. And there are several outcomes that are listed or indicators and targets, but just going back to the outcomes real briefly, dealing with the water side of things, you can see we're using Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund dollars and bond funds. We were able to construct 45 observation wells along the edge of the Mount Simon Aquifer, sealed 34 obsolete wells, and drilled 16 wells within the 11-county metropolitan area. This is supported by the recommendations in the Sustainable Water Report that you recently heard from the University of Minnesota and other activities. Making sure that we know the amount of water we have is critical to us being able to make sure that we're appropriating sustainable amounts of water for industry and agricultural and residential use. We need to build this observation well network. You can see a network of approximately 7,000 wells would be needed to track aquifer status, recharge, and surface and groundwater interactions statistically proven, but we're building a system that we can afford and maintain right now to give us the best information that we have. On the same track, but looking at it a little bit differently, the county biological survey is a county-by-county process that we've been going through for many years, again, working with LCCMR and the trust fund dollars, surveying each county for rare animals and plants, ecological and native plant communities, and rare natural features to help decision makers make those choices and know where these resources are that need or should be protected. And you can see as of December 31st, 2010, we have 81 counties done with over 17,000 locations of rare features, mapped more than 1.6 million acres of native plant communities, and collected over 5,000 vegetation samples. Just quickly going back to the watershed side of things again, Mr. Chairman, in FY10, we created watershed health assessment scores for Minnesota's 81 watersheds, and we're able to distribute them via web interfaces. These refinement tools enhance the utility and ability of decision makers to understand and to really realize what their watersheds are doing and help them with their planning activities into the future. The next strategic objective on page 4 deals with conservation assistance and regulation. About $33 million appropriated last biennium for these activities. About 51% of general fund, almost $17 million. The activities here are really working, providing assistance and regulatory assistance to protect aquatic and terrestrial resources through regulations governing work in public waters, water appropriation, aquatic plant removal, invasive species, threatened and endangered species, and then oversight of floodplain management, shoreland management, wild and scenic rivers program. This is kind of where our regulatory activities from the Division of Waters and also the permitting activities of ecological resources have been combined into this strategic objective. You can see moving over to the right-hand side of the page some of the outcomes, high-level outcomes The first one, they're working with over 200 counties and communities on updating floodplain maps and ordinances, and administered more than $112 million to over 30 local units of government for flood work mitigation, including the construction of levees, diversion, flood walls, and impoundments. These activities are ongoing right now, working with these local communities that are in the potential of being flooded to make sure that everybody knows and is aware that flood insurance is available and that there's a 30-day waiting period, something that we try to work with those local units of government to help publicize and get out to their folks so that they can prepare and make those decisions on if they should or should not have flood insurance. The bonding dollars we've been able to spend here, you can see since 1988, about $325 million in bonding and almost $11 million in general fund has been spent on flood hazard mitigation. This is a huge priority for us, protecting property, life, and people from the threat of flooding. And you can see that by those numbers. Moving on,
I have a question with regards to flood mitigation. What's the plan? What's the end to this? When does it finally come to an end, the mitigation, or is it ongoing? I know this has been worked on for many, many years, and I know that there's some bonding proposals out there again as well this year for some more mitigation. We have an end in sight.
Mr. Chair, I wish Senator Langseth would have left the room right now. He might have a good answer for us as well. But I don't have those numbers off the top of my head. We can certainly get back to you on that. We were appropriated about almost $60 million, I believe, in the last bonding cycle. And we were able to expend those dollars within a 12-month period because the need right now is so high. I think Senator Scully knows firsthand the impacts and the threats that are up in his district, as well as other members around the table. The question becomes, what do you do? I mean, there's a lot of small communities that are out there that we're spending dollars to protect, and we want to protect them, but do you build infrastructure to protect them, buy out their homes, change the way people live? It's a decision that we need to work with the legislature and with the local units of government to figure out what to do into the future. I don't have the right answer for you, Mr. Chair.
And another question, too, that the committee might be interested in finding out, what value does the SNAs and WMAs have with regards to mitigation for floods? You know, we're talking about purchasing property. I mean, that's on everybody's radar here at the legislature. What benefit is that? If there is any. Is there some studies done on that as well?
Mr. Chair, members, there are, and there is benefit to do that. Not every WMA or SNA is created equally. On-stream impoundment or trying to hold more water on the land for longer periods of time is something we're interested in trying to do. Again, the North Ottawa Project, I think, in northwestern Minnesota is a good example of that, but it's not a one-size-fits-all solution. It's a case-by-case type basis, I think, is what we're trying to work on.
Senator Scoy.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm too not going to have the answer. I do have a little bit of to add. I think with regard to the communities, if the bonding proposals that Senator Langseth and Senator Senjum are working on were to become law this year, we would be making quite a bit of strides on protecting the last of the small communities and Oak Park. There's still going to be some flood damage reduction work to be done in other areas. But, you know, part of the problem is we've had 400-year floods in the last, 10 years, so it's hard to anticipate what we need to have for flood protection. I think the current standard is a 100-year flood plus 1 foot on your ring dikes or your levees. And we're kind of, I think, one of the pieces of legislation that's in front of the legislature this year is to raise that to 100 years plus 3 feet. So we have a little more buffer against some of these large floods. Everybody, I assume, has seen the flood forecast for what's coming up again this year. But there is one area that just doesn't get much discussion with regard to flooding, and, we're protecting rural residences, we're protecting some small towns, we're trying to protect some of the larger cities, but you know, at some point we're going to have to deal with these thousands and thousands of acres that sit inundated for 8 weeks, because it's a significant economic impact on those farmers, and we're going to have to do something to put in place mechanisms to hold some of the rainwater and snowmelt where it falls, and to try to release it slower than it currently is being released. And it's going to take resources to do that. But I don't. That's just some of the stuff that I've been pondering on as I think about this flood issue that we're discussing.
Okay. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, if there's no other questions, I'm going to continue moving on. Also, under the Conservation Assistance Regulation, strategic objective is where we house most of our environmental review activities. Past biennium, we've completed and distributed several major draft EIS projects, one on North Met project, draft EIS for Keetac, and Mesabi Nugget Phase 2 project, also the Esser Steel, a supplemental EIS for that project, and also 12 EAWs for DNR and private sector development were completed or in progress. The environmental review activities that we've taken on as an agency or the past biennium or two has been huge, unparamounted compared to what we've done in the past, just because of these large expansions and new projects that are going on. That doesn't even talk about the work that we've done on some of the other projects, such as PolyMet and things like that, but those activities are housed within that strategic objective as well. Moving on to page 5, the ecosystem management and protective objective, almost $32 million. That's the one I just did, sorry. That completes the ecological resources section, Mr. Chairman.
Questions? Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Forestry is one of our larger divisions, and they're heavily dependent or heavily funded with general fund. You see here under the objective of state forest land management, managing the 4.5 million acres of state forest land for sustainable timber production, recreation, and habitat. Is almost $48 million of the budgeted activities for the Department Division of Forestry, was 38% or $18 million coming from the general fund. The other side of those activities, or the other side of those funding sources, Mr. Chairman, for the most part is a forest management investment account, where the other half of timber sales revenues are deposited. That was created probably three bienniums ago to help wean off the Division of Forestry off of the general fund, so to speak. Previous to the establishment of that account, all of the timber harvest receipts were deposited within the general fund. There's a little bit of a change. I mean, school trust timber receipts and CONCON and tax forfeit, they're handled a little bit differently, but generally speaking, state forest land timber receipts are split up between the general fund and the forest management investment account. And that's what's shown here. You can see some of the high-level outcome descriptions. On this activity, I'm going to jump right to the middle one. It's to offer at least 800,000 cords of, it should read, new wood for sale annually during the biennium. Reforestation of all acres harvested, including 18,000 to 20,000 acres of natural regeneration and 10,000 to 12,000 acres of artificial regeneration are a high priority as well. Going back to the top, making sure that our stand level inventory updates are complete and we complete re-inventorying our lands so we know what is out there for harvest, what needs to be re-harvested or replanted, I should say. And just, it's like much like a farmer will do with their crops, we manage our forest that same way, making sure we know what we have, what shape it's in, the rotation cycles, and planning. But rather than plan on a year-by-year cycle or a couple, three-year rotation maybe, we're planning on 40, 50, 60-year rotations, sometimes longer than that, based upon the silvicultural activities.
Senator Higgins.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, is this the area where the emerald ash borer activities are contained? And can you tell us a little bit about what the department's doing?
Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, I wasn't able to hear your last remarks. I'm
emerald
sorry.
Emerald ash borer. Is this the area that your work for emerald ash borer is in?
actually, that's going to be in the next one, Mr.
Okay.
Chair, members, talking about our cooperative force management activities, I believe.
Okay.
This objective deals with the management of our forests at the harvesting level side of things, not the invasive species issues.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, are we going to hit 800,000 cords? Is that possible with our current boots on the ground, doing the timber cruising, and with the budget cuts that it looks like you have coming up here, is it going to be possible to hit that 800,000 cord level with those budget cuts?
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson, yes. As Commissioner Landwehr was discussing, talking about being the economic driver that we have, that we are, especially in your area, northern Minnesota, with timber, our budget proposal doesn't impact that. There's also some replacement of some funding, as Mr. Mueller spoke of. There's $1 million reduction, and we'll get into this more in the change items. There's $1 million reduction in general fund that will be being paid for. Those activities will now be on a per unit, if you want to call it. We'll be charging back to the divisions the forestry work that has been paid for previously out of the general fund. So that is $1 million of that about $3 million general fund reduction.
Follow-up.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Meyer, will that get more boots on the ground doing what you're talking about so we get to that 100? And will it be possible to get to the million cord level that is actually where the demand is actually at a million cord level, as I understand it, and talking to the forest industry people, that we could really probably utilize 1 million cords? And would the budget accommodate enough boots on the ground to be able to do that?
Sure, Mr. Chair, Senator Mayor. Carlson, the 800,000 cord that we speak of is new timber put up for sale every year. We have been able to reach close to 1 million or 1 million reoffering timber that is still put, that is, goes up for sale, is not purchased, and we put it back up for sale. So if you did a net amount of timber put up for sale per year, we're well over that 800,000. The 800,000, when we speak of a goal, is new wood to be offered. We work very closely with the timber industry, making sure that we can maintain a product that they can come in and acquire to keep them in business and keep our mills and secondary markets operating at capacity. So it's something we're very concerned about. We feel this budget proposal will allow us to continue working at that level. But we need to make sure that what we do can keep us there. It's not going to be more boots on the ground. It's keeping the boots on the ground that we have right now on the ground is where we're at in this budget.
Please continue.
Mr. Chair, members, moving forward, I'm going to skip into the next block here, cooperative forest management. Here's the activity of supporting the efforts of private landowners and communities to maintain and enhance their forests. And I don't want people to think that there's $45 million from other sources in this area. There's actually this number where it says $48.958 million includes a $36 million appropriation from the Outdoor Heritage Fund in the 10-11 biennium for the UPM Blandin Forest for the Future conservation easement, protecting forever for access and recreation and water quality and habitat. 187,000 acres up in Senator Saxaw's district that I know, Mr. Chair, you were very influential in helping that come into light. So this activity, the numbers aren't really reflected there, but there is about $4 million of general fund there. You can see one of the outcomes is working with community forestry programs to keep our tree inspectors keep expanding the tree inspector program to serve approximately 500 communities. There's 870 total communities in the state, and make sure that we have a network of 850 tree inspectors statewide. Senator Higgins, this is some of our Emerald Ash Borer first response activities that these tree inspectors will be dealing with, working in the local communities, making sure that they know what their forests, their urban forests contain and the health of them. You can see the next building block talks about the conservation easements I just spoke of. And then the other piece of this is talking about stewardship plans, making sure that we do provide and allow for private landowners to have a stewardship plan de- developed for their property. Once you do have a stewardship plan, you are eligible for this, the Sustainable Forest Incentives Act program, which I know is a piece that's out there. We're talking about budget issues that are there, but it's much like a Green Acres program for forest land. If you're a private land, a private forest owner, you enroll in a forest stewardship plan and you follow that plan, you're eligible for a decreased tax rate, something similar to a 2C tax rate that you would have in the agricultural area. Mr. Chair, moving on to page 8, core program activities are forest information, planning, outreach, insects and disease. This is the other piece of that invasive species, $25 million, with a large chunk of this, or 43%, about $11 million from the general fund. You can see on the outcome side there, primary goal is encourage investment of forest products industry and maintaining the jobs of that secondary industry. Working with the Forest Resources Council in adapting and working with their guidelines that they establish. I think you've had a presentation from the Forest Resource Council in the past weeks talking about their work and what they do. They're a council made up of industry and citizens, environmental groups, the DNR, that help provide guidance and management level guidance on our forest activities. It helps us deal with where one time was a conflict or some conflicting views on timber management. They really help deal with those conflicting issues and help us move forward in a sustainable fashion. The other piece here is talking about terrestrial invasive plant control actions, gravel pits, right-of-ways, things like that, making sure we're forming partnerships, dealing with emerald ash borer, work with black ash management, and continue to develop the EAB, or emerald ash borer, risk rating model for Minnesota. The SFRA, or Sustainable Forest Resource Act implementation, Mr. Chairman, $2.4 million, of which 75% is from the general fund. Out of these activities, the Forest Resource Council is funded, forest management guidelines are developed, and then regional landscape committee partnerships are funded. There's over $4 million of grants in federal, private, and non-general fund grants that were issued in the previous biennium. And an example of a project that was funded with these activities include a road easement project for a 50,000-acre area in St. Louis County, which provides protected public access for timber sales and recreational uses. One of the biggest threats we're seeing within our forested areas of the state is the parcelization or privatization of these large blocks of timber that were once held by companies such as Potlatch, Blandin, and Boise Cascade. They parcel them off. We lose access to snowmobile trails, forest roads, off-road vehicle trails. And it also provides a problem for us getting access to harvest timber within those boundaries as well. So that's one of the reasons that conservation easement program, Forest for the Future, is so highly successful. It maintains those access rights, those recreation rights, the protection, the development rights, while allowing that forest to be a working forest and harvested for timber. And also there's no tilt payments or anything else going on that's associated with it. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to move into Parks and Trails Division if there are no other questions.
Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Meyer, of all the funds that you take in, how much of it, of those forestry management, selling timber, is dedicated back to your department for the management fees? Or is it all going into general fund and then reallocated back out to you?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, I will find that out, the specific answer to your question on that. I don't have that detailed information with me. I don't know if Mr. Mueller does or not, but one of the things that we've done in this presentation is rather than have all of our division directors sit in the room and listen to individual pieces, we're going to be compiling your questions and providing you detailed written information back. So that'll be a question that we'll get back to you as soon as possible. My goal is to try to get all the questions answered by the beginning of next week from our budget presentation.
Mr. Mark, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members, if there are no other questions, I'm going to move into the Parks and Trails piece on page 9. The division total for the Parks and Trails, you can see here, is nearly $200 million, $196,455,000. there is a large amount of general fund, but a large amount comes from the revenues that we do receive from people camping, day visits, purchasing materials, and staying overnight in our camper cabins and things like that. And I'll highlight that as we go forward. The first goal here is outdoor recreation, providing a diverse and connected outdoor recreation system of parks, trails, and waterways that provides great experiences. I think people within the state have shown us that recently. We've been nominated, or we were selected as to have the best trail system within the nation this past year. And also, Bearhead State Park was voted by the citizens of the country as the best state park in the country. Coca-Cola had a contest, and we actually got a $100,000 check that we're using for the park system at Bearhead State Park, I believe, because of that. So we've been recognized as having the best parks, the best trails, and I think it shows just from the quality of life that we do have and the people who come here to recreate and also the people who stay here to recreate as well. The budget activities related to this outdoor recreation piece is about $110,400,000, which about 40% of that coming from the general fund, or a little bit over $43 million. You can see some of the descriptions that we have here. Maintaining our system of 67 parks, 8 state rec areas, one off-highway vehicle recreation area, and 8 state waysides. Currently, we have over 5,500 individual campsites, 218 equestrian campsites, 68 group camps, and 75 camper cabins. On the trail side of things, we have over 1,200 miles of state trails. State parks have 1,250 miles of trails within them. And also, our state forests provide another 1,100 miles of non-motorized opportunities and 2,000 miles of motorized activity. There are tons of trails on lands managed by counties and federal government, and we need to work with all of those entities to make sure that we have a connected and diverse trail system throughout the state. We also have 54 state forest campgrounds that we'll be talking about in our change items as well. Past biennium, we've upgraded or added over 20 campsites, 4 new camper cabins, and 30 new electric sites. Provided a lot of new opportunities such as geocaching at 25 additional locations at state parks and rec areas. One new mountain bike opportunity up in the Deerwood area at Cuyuna rec area, state rec area. And we continue to monitor 50% of our motorized trails each year and maintain non-motorized and motorized trails as well. On the water recreation side of things, Mr. Chairman, Minnesota has over 3,000 public water access sites out of about 5,500 that are a priority, 5,500 lakes that are a priority for having water access sites. Of the 3,000, a little bit more than half, 1,595, are public water access sites that the department maintains and works cooperatively with local units of government on about 200 other sites statewide. We'll be talking about this. We have a change item, Mr. Chairman, dealing with our water recreation sites and the invasive species issues, doing some demonstration projects, showing people and trying to help us understand how we can provide boat washing facilities to help deal with the spread of invasive species. But we'll get to that here in a little bit. On the outcome side, we've added 3 new sites to our water access system, and we need to come back and update some of these sites to deal with some of these best management practices that I spoke of. Moving on to page 10, Mr. Chairman. Outreach and conservation education, about $12 million, 46% coming from the general fund. All of our interpretive and naturalist programs are here. You can see in the past biennium, we provided over 8,500 naturalist programs per year, serving 266,000 visitors and nearly 2 million guests. If you ever had the opportunity to take one of these naturalist programs or tours when you were young, many of you, I'm sure, it was a very enriching experience. This is one of the things we hear from our visitors in our parks, that they really enjoy these types of activities, and it provides an added interest, so to speak, for people enjoying our park system. Moving on to our overnight guests, last biennium we received a 5% increase to almost 1 million visitors, doubling our 2% target increase that we saw. And during that same time period, the number of year-round permits increased by 7%. Also, our web pages now, you can go on the DNR website and actually take a virtual tour of most, if not all, of our campsites, our state parks, our camper cabins. If you haven't been to the DNR Parks and Trails website, I really encourage you to look at that. It's just so cool what we've done now. You can see what Campsite 53 looks like up at Gooseberry Falls. You can try to tell that where you're by, how close you're going to be, where the fire pit would be, and try to figure out where you want to go, and then go online and make a reservation to stay at that park.
Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I ask a question about parks from this book? Or is that better for Thursday?
I think for Thursday we're going to get more into the, excuse me, Mr. Meyer, we're going to get more into the changes of the budget on Thursday. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gazalka, yes. Is it?
But I,
we can Chair, try to answer it right now if you want.
Well, I was just looking. I see the hours and shortened season of operations for the parks, and I don't know if that you want that addressed Thursday or not, but I'm just wondering why, in light of we're raising revenue and fees in a lot of places, and why are we cutting the hours there?
Sure, I can talk about it a little bit. We'll talk about it more when we get to that section. One of the proposals is to deal with the general fund reductions we have, is look at our park system. And some of the parks, all parks aren't created equal. I think everybody understands that. We have parks that are underutilized. We have parks that are overutilized. What we're trying to do is adjust our management activities at some of those underutilized areas and open them a little bit later, like Memorial Day weekend, and close them a little bit earlier, like after Labor Day weekend, to help deal with that budget shortfall. Now, when I don't say close, they'll have reduced services available. They may not have full-time visitor hours, or there may be a manager that's been running the facility from a satellite location, for example. But the park would still be open for someone to go see. We aren't going to close the gate and shut it down completely. But it's just looking at our management regime and how to reduce costs is one of those proposals that we have in that provision. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay. Outreach and conservation, I think we've covered that, talking about the website. Moving on to page 11 here, resource management and planning. A little bit over $25 million expended last biennium, about 20%, 19% from the general fund of $4.8 million. This really deals with the creation and sustaining of a system of outdoor recreation that conserves our natural and cultural resources. Managing those activities, you can see restoration of 2,500 acres of native plant communities within the state parks, 940 acres along state trails, 19,000 acres of prescribed burning and control of invasive species on 23,000 parks and trails administered lands. Also working at doing these strategic planning processes or our management plans, updating those to deal with those activities. This is the when people talk about management of state lands, these are those activities that we're doing within the parks and trail system that would be similar to what we do in a wildlife management area or a scientific and natural area sometimes if there's a large native prairie community sitting there or forestry work that needs to be done. So when a person goes into the park system, they can see what that land was or what it is and understand what that biome or that ecological classification system is in that park, and it's managing that invasive species work, making sure that the plant and tree community that is within the park is representative of what it was when that land was first there, and the natural heritage of it all. Mr. Chairman, on page 12, community assistance, $48,800,000, none from the general fund. These are all of our grant aid programs. This is where the people like you and I are paying the department to do the things that we so much want to do. Snowmobile, ATV, cross-country ski, boat. All of your registration activities, license fees, are considered under this category. And you can see we administer about 360 grants per fiscal year for maintenance and operations and capital improvements, trails, bridge replacement, development of public accesses, helping clubs with the equipment purchase and things like that. Water access sites, also the Parks and Trail Legacy grants are here, and we'll talk a little bit about that when we get to the change item. But those projects we funded, We helped provide or develop 147 miles of trail, acquired 237 acres of parkland, and helped develop or redevelop 10 regional parks with the Parks and Trails Legacy Grant Program over 2 years with the dedicated funding dollars. A Grant Aid snowmobile trail system, you know, 21,000 miles of trails crisscrossed throughout the state. Cross-country ski trails, 1,000 miles of those administered by 39 clubs. The snowmobile trails, we have over 180 local units of government and clubs that are dealing with that. And also off-road highway vehicle grant and aid programs, 140, almost 1,500 miles, I'll say it that way, of trails and 41 grants going to clubs throughout the state helping us manage those. Mr. Chairman, that moves us into the Fish and Wildlife Division.
Members, we'd like to finish right on time at 3:30 today, so if you can limit your questions, if they're budgetary-wise, you're going to be coming back with that on Thursday, but continue if you would.
Mr. Chairman, members, with that, I'm going to not go through, as I've been trying not to go through, every block on this spreadsheet, but I will do the best we can to get us out of here, maybe a little bit early even.
Thank you.
Fish and Wildlife Division, you can see it's $216,663,000, of which is very small percentage is general fund. On this first building block here, $64 million, almost 65. There's only $1.4 million of general fund that's there. This just to think about it, dealing with our healthy and productive fish and wildlife populations, making sure we're maintaining them and doing what we can. You can see under the outcome descriptions, some of you will probably be very interested on the wolf research and management that we have been doing. The activities listed here deal with the ongoing work that we've been doing to make sure that we can prove to the federal government that the wolf population has been reestablished and should be delisted. Another outcome that I know you're very interested in deals with the servant health and CWD. Mr. Chairman, just recently you can see in this first block, we've identified the portion of the zone that we need to harvest the deer in. We need to take 900 deer within the surveillance area, of which 500 will be taken within 5 mile radius of the confirmed CWD positive deer. The snow that just recently came certainly doesn't help us, but we have great landowner cooperation going on down there, and we can provide more of an update for you in the future. And also, this proposal, or under this outcome, we talk about our cervid bovine TB work, which provide the basis for a lot of our knowledge that we're using now in southeastern Minnesota. Under this objective, we're also dealing with our lakes and streams, making sure that we have the stream surveys and assessment management plans necessary to establish sustainable seasons and populations. Talk about deer permit areas. We actively manage our harvesting on a year-by-year basis. Some will say we manage it too actively, some not enough, depending on how many deer you may or may not see during the hunting season. But we do rules, expedited rulemaking activities on both our fisheries and our hunting activities on a yearly basis, establishing those seasons and the regulations and the harvest levels to make sure that they do fit in with our quotas. Also under this category are fish stocking programs that are there. You can see beginning FY04, we've been increasing our private commercial fisheries purchases with, I think last year was about 50,000 pounds, Mr. Chairman, that we purchased from private individuals in our stocking program that is listed there. Moving on to page 15, our fish and wildlife habitat management. $97 million, about $500,000 of that is general fund. These are our land acquisition programs. You can see survey work dealing with the health and quality of the water, statewide approach of monitoring and assessing waters, index of biological integrity, so what it's called. You'll hear some of that with the clean water proposal that we have. Shallow lakes, wild rice management, acres of seasonal wetlands managed for wildlife, making sure that we maintain healthy habitat for our duck and shallow lake populations is very important and carried out under this proposal as well. Moving on to page 16, technical assistance. This kind of gets at some of what Senator Peterson was asking about, but on the fish and wildlife side, $19,500,000. Our stakeholder, public information, permitting, coordination, planning, guidance, outreach that we do. You can see the citizen outreach and engagement is important to us, our roundtables, our species workshops, and our public meetings. Senator Carlson, I believe you were at one of our Leech Lake input meetings and worked through that process that we had. It took us over a year dealing with what the future of Leech Lake should be, how much should we be stocking, bringing consensus to the table or trying to develop consensus around the table from the resorters, the local units of government, the walleye fishermen and women throughout the state and the residents up there who live there. And I think we came, the plan was great. We started at a place that wasn't so great. We ended up in a place that I think everybody knows how to move forward. We're in agreement on how we're going to move forward with the lake. That's just one example there. Our farmland assistance program, making sure that we're working with the soil and water conservation districts and providing them the assistance they need so they can do the outreach to the farmers in the ag areas to know what programs they can sign up for and register for and participate in. And also working with our subsection forest resource management plans at making sure we're incorporating all of our needs, not only forestry, but fish, wildlife, and water quality, and economic and recreational development into our forest management plans are covered under this section. Mr. Chairman, moving on to page 17, talking about outreach and department programs, you can see about $4 million, of which there is no general fund. These are programs such as MinAqua, our hunting and mentoring programs, youth mentor deer hunts, Southeast Asian program, becoming outdoors women, outdoors family, natural archery in the schools program. These are the activities we're trying to open the doors to people or have people understand, not be afraid to participate in these things. The natural school archery in schools program is one example of the success that's out there. I think at the bottom of this page in that 10-11 outcomes box, you can see we have over 100,000 children participating statewide, FY10, 109,000 kids. And if you've ever get the opportunity to see something really exciting, try to go to the state meet where there's thousands of these kids competing. And I can tell you firsthand, it changes their lives being able to compete in a sport that is not team-based, it's individual-based. And then a lot of them take it the next level where they go out and try hunting, do some work, buckthorn removal, for example, for a chance to shoot a deer or hunt deer in some places. It really provides us the opportunity to get kids on the right track and try to keep them out of trouble, in my opinion. Mr. Chairman, moving on to page 18, there's two other categories here. One is public information and customer service. This is our licensing stuff that we have, the licensing center, distributing our regulations books, running our website, things of that nature. Our new ELS system technology that came out last year that people are familiar with now. I think we have all the kinks out of the system. It's up and running, helps us administer our licenses better. And also the treaty payments, which is about $15 million, that does come out of the general fund so that people can participate in hunting and fishing activities within some of the tribal reservation areas throughout the state. Mr. Chairman, if there's no questions, I'm going to move right into enforcement here. The budget here for our enforcement is $65 million, and you can see it's broken up into several categories, including environmental protection, fisheries game protection, recreational enforcement and safety training, public safety, and water recreation. I think each of those categories are pretty much self-explanatory, but let me just highlight some of the funding breakdowns of that. The environmental protection funding piece, $4.5 million of this, almost 70% is from the general fund. The thing to remember with the enforcement division is that all the activities are fund-driven. So when we have general fund, we're doing general-type enforcement activities, wetland enforcement, public health and safety, things of that nature, cease and desist orders. We are the enforcement agency, so to speak, for the Wetland Conservation Act. Soil and Water Conservation District, Bowser, somebody will notify us that there's been a possible violation. Our enforcement officers will go to that individual, that location. oftentimes determine if there has been a violation, issue a restoration order or a cease and desist order, which then goes back into the enforcement process or through the system. But it's our, because we have the enforcement arm, people always think that we're heavily involved with the Wetland Conservation Act. We just do the enforcement of the Wetland Conservation Act in conjunction with local units of government and other agencies. The fisheries side of things, you can see here, fisheries and game protection, about $40 million from the general fund doing general fisheries activities. And as we talk about outcomes, Mr. Chairman, it's been difficult for us to come up with true outcomes for our enforcement division, but one that we're working on here is a violation rate that was about 415 violations per 100,000 license holders. We're still trying to get our arms around that. We'll be able to track that and show hopefully a decrease of that in time, but that's one of the outcomes there. Moving on to enforcement, safety, and training. We've trained over 13,000 students in snowmobile safety, 4,000 in ATV safety, and our decrease in incidence rates are shown there. Firearm safety as well. Our public safety and service, Mr. Chairman, you can see about $1.3 million. That's all general fund-related activities on page 19. Again, driving back, the funding source drives our work activities. Water recreation, about $8.5 million per year from the water rec account. And our incident rate is well below the national average of 5.3 deaths. Actually, ours is 1.53, and the national average is 5.3 deaths per 100,000 registered boats. It was kind of a quick glance at our enforcement division. We'll be talking more about them with the change items. One of the issues that we face with enforcement is our declining workforce. We have over 20 vacancies right now with several more anticipated over the next biennium. We will be discussing a change item within the enforcement division to allow us to have an academy this coming biennium. Two academies within the next biennium, Mr. Chair.
Deputy Commissioner, Assistant Commissioner, I found it interesting talking with, I believe it was the Chief of the Enforcement Division a couple of years ago, asked about the complement of COs, the actual, as we've referred to them as in the past, as game wardens out there enforcing the game and fish laws. Has that grown? I was kind of led to understand we're still at 1970, 75, 76, right in there, complement. So that complement has not grown over the years?
Mr. Chair, members, our stations have remained the same. The number of stations that we have, the individual complement has grown and increased, decreased. For example, we have wetland enforcement officers. Some of those are specialized or have been specialized officers in the past. I think at its peak we had eight of those officers just enforcing the Wetland Enforcement Act. We've had in previous years special legislation instituting an enforcement officer. For example, I believe it was in the Pillsbury State Forest to deal with just an off-highway vehicle enforcement officer. So our conservation, our game warden stations, if that's what you're referring to, have remained the same for several decades. But our complement has ebbed and flowed, so to speak, by a percent or two, maybe.
Thursday, you'll be coming forward with the changes in the governor's budget, discussing that in more detail, members. Also included, if I could, have a report from you or maybe a document showing us the balances of the dedicated funds, because I know some of the dedicated funds are going to be drawn from. So I think the members would like to see what actually is there. And you can describe those funds a little better when we get here.
Mr. Okay. Chairman, members, yes. There is several proposals dealing with the dedicated accounts, increasing, decreasing, actually allowing us to have a statutory appropriation on those accounts so that we don't need to adjust them every year or two. What happens is, for example, the pheasant stamp dollars. Those go into the pheasant stamp account. They need to be appropriated back to the department. We can't spend money we don't have, but we need to come back and either ask for more dollars or reduce the appropriation that was made in the past based upon the purchasing activity of those specialized permits. So We will be able to provide you that in a lot more detail.
It's important to understand, members, that the DNR has to come back to us for those appropriations. That has to be statutory. So but we'd like a total of those if we could get them to the next meeting. Any other questions? I would suggest, again, going through this document very closely, and you'll see what the department does do in the state of Minnesota, some of the outcomes, and prepare yourself for some financial talk on Thursday, because that's what we're going to be doing. So.
Mr. Chair, just if I may, real quickly, first of all, I want to thank you for your patience in putting up with listening to my voice for the past hour and a half. But in your packets, you'll have, and if you can keep them, our budget change item presentation, which is the handout with the pictures on it, and also the packet that we distributed with the letter from the commissioner. This is all of our fact sheets, so to speak, that provide you great detail. We three-ring punch them so you can put them right in your book, hopefully. Great detail on each budget change item, Mr. Chairman and members. So please save those two things, and we'll be working on those starting Thursday. And I'll work with Mr. Chair, yourself, and staff as to how you want to proceed schedule-wise, if you want to dive right into the hunting, fishing stuff and the boat stuff first and do the other ones, or we'll figure that out in the next day or two and go from there.
I think there'll be a lot of interest in doing that. So anything else? If not, we're adjourned.
Take this with us or leave it?
Don't the time.
You can do it.